Coming up this week on Vacation Land, Chris can't read a calendar. SeaWorld prepares to lay off 350 employees. Controversy erupts from an incident at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood. And Disneyland giveth and Disneyland taketh away. Plus, Brandis will be talking about her follow-up to Not Scary Farm. Also, we're going to add a new segment about theme park history we're calling Behind the Turnstiles. From an undisclosed location near the Pacific Ocean, this is Vacation Land. This is Vacation Land for the week of October 30th, 2017. You can connect with Vacation Land online by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/vacationlandpodcast, our Instagram at VLPodcast, and don't forget you can now find us on iTunes, which as we discovered is not as hard to get onto as you think it is. But if you like what you're hearing, click on that subscribe button, join our dozens and dozens of listeners that have subscribed to that. So, hello, welcome to another edition of Vacation Land, a discussion of the latest news, views, and reviews from around Southern California theme park scene. And this week we're going to add some history brought to you by our theme park team of experts and fans. I am your host, Chris Ramirez, and this week I am joined by YouTube sensation Brandis Strotman, who brought a special guest with her. Brandis, who did you bring with you?
This is my husband, John.
Hi, John. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. As always, we have our associate producer, John Bass.
Check, check.
And Delaney is not here. She's off exploring the parks today, and she'll be bringing back some reviews and some things that she did on a later show. Also joining us today, though, in her sort of absence, is our good friend, historian, comedian, poet warlord, author of Skipper Stories, David Marley. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How's that?
That's much better. All right. So David's going to be chiming in today with us, and he's going to give us his take on being a part of the Anaheim Halloween Parade, plus a little bit later on with Disney's big announcement that we're going to be talking about on its hotel expansion. David's going to be a part of what we hope is first in a series of history segments by bringing us some of the background of the Disneyland Hotel when we get to that in park hopping. So let me explain the Chris can't read a calendar portion. When we last recorded here, I thought that this show was going to take place in the middle of November. Apparently, I can't read a calendar and forecast 2 weeks in advance what the date was going to be. So
yeah, we're still October.
Yeah, this is still October. You know. I didn't realize that we were going to be recording. We're now 2 days from Halloween, so we're going to bring Brandis in and John, and they're going to talk about their experience, their follow-up trip to Halloween Haunt at Knott's Berry Farm. I believe you guys did the early entry, right?
We did the buffet early entry dinner.
Yeah, how did that work out for you guys?
You know, it was, I would say, there is one part of it. It's very well handled. It's only $30 extra. $28 if you have a pass, I think $32 without a pass. You have to buy entry to Not Scary Farm to even do the dinner. You do a reservation. So all of that, it works out really well. My only complaint was the line for the food and the lack of food choices.
Oh, okay. So what's going on there?
So I picture a buffet as there's a lot of food choices. You could leisurely stuff yourself until you're sick. You kind of go like, yeah, you don't cut in front of people to get your food. But if one person, you know, is getting a salad and next to it you want the pasta, you could kind of reach around them. Going there, it was this super long line of you just get in line. It was more cafeteria style. You get in line, get your food, go sit down. The line's too long for you to go get seconds, so pile up while you can.
I'm sure that was entirely by design.
Well, yeah.
I'll say, like, it's not really about the food, really. It's about you getting early. Like, that's what you're really paying for.
Yeah. And
food
is
just like, sure, you're giving some food.
Yeah, right? And I it's definitely worth the early entry, but not worth the food.
Okay, so talk about the early entry. How did that end up working out for you guys?
So we went in at 5:30 to get dinner, and then they let us in at, I think it was 6, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that kind of was we were misled on is that we thought we'd go in at 6, but we had to wait. Like, everybody had to wait till 6:30.
And the only ride you could go on in that amount of time is Ghost Rider.
Which is awesome, so it's okay.
Did you guys have to do any mazes or
yes,
anything
once
early
it
entry?
Opens. So yeah, at 6 you're allowed into the waiting zone in the park, which then you could only go on Ghost Rider. No mazes. But at 6:30 you could go on the mazes. And we were able to get on four mazes with no lines before the park opened. And if we wanted to be dorks and run around the park, we probably could have done five or six.
How busy was it that night? This was, you did this last Saturday, right?
Yeah. Okay. So
the week before Halloween.
We started at the early entry. Up until, it was actually, there was barely any waits. Our longest wait at that point in time was, I would say, maybe like 20 minutes or 30 minutes.
About 30 minutes or so.
For Dark Ride. Yeah. And then we went at 9:30 to see Elvira's last show. And then when we got out of that show, so it's now about 10, all lines were 2 hours or more wait.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty intense.
And to the early entry, it would have been a rough one.
So we, at that point, just left. We're too old to wait 2 hours in line.
Was it busier or equal to or?
It was busier than when we went before. Because before we went at the end of September, so now this close to Halloween on a Saturday, it was so packed I felt claustrophobic trying to leave. Wow. I could barely leave the park. It was so packed. And then to make matters worse, like I said, we're old. It was all teenagers. You're old. It was all teenagers. It was wall-to-wall teenagers trying to get in as we're trying to leave.
Did you get to do anything that you did not do before?
Yes, we did. The main one was this one called Trick or Treat, which you go through a maze like you always do, but you have a flashlight. And it's darker in there, so you just have this little flashlight that kind of like flickers out, and at one point just goes out, and you're like basically in darkness. It's pretty scary, pretty fun. And then we went on the other ones. They actually were all different this time.
Yeah, we've never gone twice in 1 year, so I didn't realize that each time you go in a maze, it's a little different than before. So that was impressive.
So I was expecting stuff where I thought, okay, I know they got me here last time, and then I go in there and be nothing, and I turn the corner, and then they get me again.
Yeah, there was another podcast that did a review of Not Scary Farm, and they had also been to Halloween Horror Nights before, and they really enjoyed the experience at Not Scary Farm. So it sounds like you guys had a really good time, and the buffet, worth it or not? I mean,
it's worth the cost for the early entry. The food is lackluster. It's not really a buffet at all. It's just grab your food, sit down, get out.
You get one, you know, get one shot at it.
And there's not much of a selection for a buffet.
Wow.
But you should do it.
Well, because it comes with the early entry, so it's still free food. What if time you think about it that way.
Oh, you get a free water bottle.
Oh, yes, you do. You get a free, soda. You get a refillable soda.
So the plastic mug.
Yeah,
things.
So it's refillable all night.
That's great.
And actually, it doesn't say Not Scary Farm on there, so I guess it's refillable the rest of the year.
What time does Not Scary Farm normally open?
7 p.m., not a.m.
They kick everybody out of the park. Normal park goers at 6.
Okay.
Oh, and at 7 is when they open the gates for most. Of course, they let the early entry people in.
And that's why for early entry, you get a sticker, and they tell you, do not take this off until 7. And I saw firsthand why, as I saw two guys trying to hide
from
it was really funny to watch security.
Because nobody's in the history of Not Scary Farm has ever thought about doing that before, right?
Yeah, they were outside the buffet, just sitting there like all conspicuous or inconspicuous, and we all got our little orange stickers on, and there's somebody like walks right up to him and. You see him questioning them, and they were trying to... I couldn't hear what they were saying, but you could tell by their body language they were trying to argue it, and then she escorted them out.
Huh. Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much, Brandis, and thank you, John, for chiming in on that. That's very helpful. David, I know you're mostly a Disney person. Have you ever been to or had any interest in going to, or your kids have any interest in going to any of these scare things, like Halloween Horror Nights or Not Scary Farm or anything like that?
I went to the Not Scary Farm one time. It was right after I'd moved back from Washington, D.C., and where I'd been trained not to let people sneak up on me. And so I spent most of the night turning and looking. I just naturally turn and look behind me as I walk.
I went to school in downtown Los Angeles. So people popping out of dark corners just doesn't do it for me.
It's not going to happen. So on more than one occasion, I'd see them as they were about to leap out, and I'd motion them forward, and then I'd slowly change places with them and let them scare my wife and her sister. I'm a horrible person.
Well,
I thought it was funny, though.
You did.
It's natural.
No, David, you did something Halloween-related that is not a scare event, or it's probably an event that a lot of people don't know much about. Can you tell us what you did yesterday?
Slept until like 11.
Yeah, that's really...
Oh, that's not... No, that's going to be edited out. I'm sorry.
No, we're keeping it.
That's in.
That's staying in.
We're keeping that.
Congrats, being able to sleep until 11.
Thank you. I mean, thank you. Thank you.
That is an achievement.
I'd like to thank alcohol and a tolerant wife.
No, I had to get there. Actually, I had to get up early on Saturday to help finish a parade float. It was in the Anaheim Halloween Parade. That's the oldest Halloween parade this side of the Mississippi River.
And how did you...
On the correct side of the Mississippi River.
Right, the western
which
side.
Which begs the question, how many Halloween parades are there on this side of the Mississippi River?
Probably a bunch.
Yeah.
But this one's been going on since 1923.
Let us know if you have a Halloween parade.
If you, yeah, if your town has a Halloween parade, connect with us on Facebook.com/vacationland. So how did you get connected with this? I had seen like Facebook ads for it before, but I didn't know much about it. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at your Instagram and your Trevor's Facebook page, and you guys are building a giant float for a Halloween parade.
Yeah. Trevor Kelly called me and asked me if I wanted to. You want to be in the parade? I'm like, drive a float? I'm like, sure. And then I got roped into helping build some of it.
How did Trevor get roped into that?
I think it's through the Anaheim Brewery. His wife is the manager of the Anaheim Brewery, and so they have a float, and he knew people, and he's getting to know all these different people in Anaheim. So we got him through that way.
Did you partake in any of the – we're trying to have Trevor on today, but I guess there were some after-parade events that Trevor was going to be a part of.
There were many.
Did you partake in any of that?
I did not. For the first time in a long time, I came home stone sober. It was a bizarre experience.
What was being in the parade like? What was the parade like? Were there a lot of people there?
There were a ton. They said like upwards of 40,000 people attend this, and it was all along Broadway in downtown Anaheim, and then we went through around Center Street, then down Anaheim Boulevard, and ended at the Packing House. And it just got more and more crowded the longer the parade went. This is a good... right around 2 mile parade.
Yeah, this is something that they're definitely trying to bring. I don't think it ever went away, but they're definitely trying to reintroduce it to a new generation. And it looked like a lot of fun. I'd never seen it until last year. But did you have a good experience? How was your experience?
Yeah, I think like the past 10 years, they've really tried to put a revitalization effort into it. I mean, Anaheim has given them a big warehouse where they store all these floats year round. And there's one of the guys, a guy named Bill, took 11 of his vacation days to work on these floats. He was in there for 12 hours a day for over 2 weeks, just working on these beautiful floats, do all kinds of cool things. Ours was a giant tiki mug that was new this year that Bill mostly built and then Trevor and I helped with. And then it was pulling a tiki bar that was, it's beautiful.
Nice. Fully stuffed.
I wish.
Was it a functional tiki bar?
I wish. And
it was, people chasing after you.
It was hooked to it, and it would swing to the right dangerously all the time, so one of us would take turns kind of pushing it, straightening it out. And then I think I let Trevor drive it more because I ended up liking running behind it and just doing... I told my wife I was doing a whole Danny Kaye bit. I was, like, falling over things and taking drink orders from the crowd, and then I'd look inside and see there was no booze, and I'd throw my hat and kick it and... get upset.
Now, is there any way this tiki bar can find its way back maybe to your backyard?
Not that one, because they'd find me. They'd know I stole it, because I wanted to a lot. But it's beautiful.
I saw you guys. Way to my backyard.
I think you know the artist.
If we go in together, we can all just hijack it.
Maybe.
We could share it. I'll keep it for June through half of July.
I know where the warehouse is, so...
Pretty sure the guy who made it would not let anybody take it.
Yeah. It was actually designed by Kevin and Jody. Artists, Disney artists Kevin and Jody.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah,
and it's beautiful.
I'll be honest. I saw you guys painting it, and I saw it in its like unpainted wood state, and I went, did these guys build? Did you and Trevor build this thing? Trevor Kelly is our friend and former Jungle Cruise skipper who does Beer and Old Blue Eyes at the Anaheim Brewery, mm-hmm. and he did do comedy. He was a host of another podcast previously. Called Trevor and Joey Talk About Things, which was a great show. But you physically did not build this float yourself?
No, the tiki bar, not at all. The tiki mug, Bill built it, and then we helped put the mouth and the teeth and the nose. I was the nose guy. I figured, all right, I'm from Orange County. I can do some plastic surgery on nose. That's how it works.
That's pretty standard.
Any augmentation that needed to be done, but it's only a mug. But the guy Bill brought in a picture. It was his favorite tiki mug from his collection. And said, this is what I want to recreate. So we already have plans how we want to update it for next year.
David, tell our dozens and dozens of listeners around the world, tell them what you do. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and how we became connected and friends. And
How much do you want? I'm a history professor at Cal State Fullerton. Teach American history and World Civ. And according to the Disney Company, I taught the first ever class on the history of Disneyland before I came to Fullerton.
And what did you do at Disneyland?
I was a Jungle Cruise skipper. Is there any other job at Disneyland to have?
I can't.
All the other ones are not. No. I found out officially by Walt's rule, there's only two jobs at Disneyland. There's Jungle Cruise skipper and then not Jungle Cruise skipper. So you could be a cook or a street sweeper or vice president of the park, but you're officially listed as not a Jungle Cruise skipper. That Walt Disney's own words that I just made up.
That's great. And then you you also do other things connected with being a former Jungle Cruise skipper, right?
Yeah, Jungle Cruise has taken over my life. I run the Skipper Show, producer of the Skipper Show that is either at the Brea Improv or randomly at the Anaheim Brewery a couple times a year, and I run an Etsy store that's all based on Jungle Cruise stuff that I love.
And you wrote a book?
And I wrote a book. I forgot the marketing, the money part. I wrote Skipper Stories, which has the tales of a young Chris Ramirez in it. And that book's gone really well, so there's going to be two more volumes of Skipper Stories.
What is Skipper Stories?
It's an oral history, a collection of stories from Jungle Cruise skippers from literally opening day to skippers that work there right now. I think I have four or five of my students from Cal State Fullerton that are current skippers there now.
I was referring to it, Cal State Disneyland.
It covers the whole...
to get to be a skipper?
If you knew us better, the answer would be clearly not.
Yeah.
They hired us,
so...
Yeah. What I found is Disney, when you go in to apply for a job, they're just looking to put bodies in the open slots, and there'd be people at Jungle Cruise that wanted to be there their whole life, and people that hated speaking in front of crowds and wanted to quit. And people that would be perfect for Jungle were sent off to Tomorrowland or other places in Disney.
Storybook Land.
Disney didn't really care. They were just looking
to fill. Forced to be Cinderella.
Those people made the real money.
And you did two stints at the Jungle Cruise, right? Or two stints at Disneyland, right?
Yeah. Three, actually. I was there in 96 for the summer, was a skipper. And then I came back thanks to my wife and her mentor, Diane Doyle. I got to be work the opening of California Adventure. Did media press tours and stuff. That was fun. And the opening ceremonies.
I was at the opening ceremonies after having worked a 19-hour or 20-hour day the night and day before Disney's California Adventure opened.
You know what's crazy? I was there too.
Were you there? Were you in the park? Did you go to the parking structure? Because if you went to the parking structure, you probably saw me there.
I don't. Well, here's what I remember. I had a friend at the time who her dad was an Imagineer or whatever.
Ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. So we got tickets to go in. I think it was the day before it opened, maybe.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had us there in anticipation of the crowds, and literally dozens and dozens of people showed up because they had those previews. But that's a
story. Why were you in the parking garage?
Well, they thought that they were going to queue everybody up in the Mickey and Friends parking structure that was going to then be led into the park once it opened.
Okay.
Needless to say that the crowds did not quite match the level of anticipation that mm-hmm. they had, and so there were hundreds of cast members there to corral thousands of guests, and when only maybe 500 people or so showed up, they just didn't send us home. So we literally worked from the afternoon straight on into the evening.
Wow.
And into the next morning, where then we walked everybody from the parking structure over to the main entrance, and that's where they had the big opening ceremony mm-hmm. where Roy Disney came out and opened the park, and I was front and center of those. The right behind the last row of chairs for the people that mattered. And so I got to see the whole entire opening ceremony, and we opened the park, and that's cool.
And people hated on that park when it first started.
For a very long time. Yeah. So people likened it to having a birthday party that no one shows up for.
My wife and I loved it when it first opened because there would be nobody there.
Yeah. I mean, that was the one benefit of it.
It was great.
Like, and you could just go...
I forget where we were having lunch. We were having lunch and we were counting on the main walkway, like from the Sun Sphere all the way back to the Paradise Pier section. We counted more cast members than we did guests. We did. And a lot of them were managers. They'd be buying their suits and ties and they'd have their... And they just walked around looking worried in big clumps. And I thought, oh, this park never fills up. This is awesome. And then they had to ruin it by adding fun things.
And so, it only took them $1 billion to fix it.
Yeah. Only $1 billion. Well, they wanted to do it on the cheap. And that's what you get. Yeah, when you do it on the cheap, you end up spending more money. So.
And your wife is here. She's not on the microphone, but she is here visiting with us. And she's also a very good friend of ours. And
it was Bring Your Spouse to the Podcast Day.
It was.
You know what? I like that. That's going in the description of the show for your spouse of the podcast day. But I'll give a quick shout out to our David, David Marley's wife, Deb Marley, who is, again, a good friend and largely responsible for most of my career. So, all right. Well, thank you.
Give her a microphone?
And my career as well.
Well, thank you, David. That sounds like the Anaheim Halloween Parade sounds like it was a lot of fun.
It was a blast. The only bummer is they don't let us hand out candy.
Really?
I bought a bunch of candy. Like,
did
no,
you can't.
I walked over and just handed some because I don't care. Like, no, you can't throw out candy because kids will run in the street. I'm like, well, I'll walk over to the edge and just drop it in their hands. Like, no, you can't because there's concerns about one time a guy brought a thing and it was just old lawyer crap and I don't like lawyers, so I'm like, I'm handing out candy. I'm working for free. Fire me.
David's got a Raiders shirt on, so just,
I do have a Raiders shirt on.
To diverge slightly, what is it with highly educated people? You're the third PhD I know that's a Raiders fan, and
I think that should tell you something. It's actually what that means. Perhaps you're seeing things.
The writing may be on the wall.
All right. Well, thank you, David, and thank you, everyone, for sort of wrapping that up for us. And now I would like to move on. We're going to move on here, and we're going to begin park hopping.
Welcome to the Magic Kingdom of Disneyland. There are several ways to visit this happy place. If this is your first visit, you may enjoy the guided tour. Welcome to Universal Studios Hollywood, the entertainment capital of LA.
Okay, well, that's our new intro music for Park Hopping. Park Hopping is our news segment, and we are going to begin this week. We've got a few stories, and I would love for our guests to chime in on, and so we're going to kick it off over to John. John, what's our first news story?
Well, SeaWorld, as we spoke out last week, the potential sale of their one place. Well, SeaWorld is now announcing that they're laying off 350 employees, while they continue to struggle with declining attendance. They announced on Tuesday, the 18th, that at the end of the fiscal year, they will lay off 350 employees. They're calling it a restructuring to lower administrative costs, increase efficiency, and pivot toward growth initiatives to boost attendance across its 12 entertainment water park portfolio. SeaWorld employs 5,000 full-time employees, approximately 8,300 part-time employees, according to the company. Layoffs are primarily going to hit the administrative positions at the corporate headquarters in Orlando and SeaWorld Parks in San Diego and Orlando, a SeaWorld spokesman said. The number of positions impacted at SeaWorld San Diego is roughly 79, so it sounds like Orlando is taking the biggest brunt of this and mostly in administrative. Company stated, "We do not take this task lightly. It is unfortunate but necessary consequence of the restructuring that some positions will be lost. For those employees, we're offering severance benefits and outplacement assistance to help with their transition." Additionally, SeaWorld said that one of their goals with this massive downsizing is to invest some of the saved cash from those job losses into revamped marketing efforts, finding new ways to reach potential guests, and hanging on to the ones they currently have. Since the release of the 2013 Blackfish documentary, which criticized how the park handles its Orca Killer Whale show, SeaWorld has seen its attendance drop. In SeaWorld San Diego, attendance has fallen from 4.3 million in 2013 to 3.5 million in 2016, according to Themed Entertainment Association and Industry Trade Group.
All right, so that's a lot to take in. So that's 350 people are now losing their jobs. As we reported on our last show, it looks like Merlin Entertainment, who runs Madame Tussauds and Legoland, is looking at buying out at least a portion of SeaWorld. But Brandy, when we talked about when we were talking before the show, what is it that you said about Blackfish did what?
Blackfish really hurt them.
Yeah.
I think the only way they're going to overcome that is if all their orcas die naturally of old age and then they go into just rescue only.
Yeah.
I like the TEA, the Themed Entertainment industry organization. I keep track of their attendance records, and it dropped like 13% after Blackfish, but mostly just in California. The San Antonio one and the Orlando one just dropped a little bit. It was the California one that had the huge plunge.
Are you a SeaWorld person, David? You're...
Not really. I mean, my girls liked it. My oldest daughter wanted to be a SeaWorld trainer until she heard about Blackfish. but I was in Orlando this February and talked to a guy that had worked for a number of theme parks out there, including he just finished a project with SeaWorld, and he told me he didn't think they were going to be around much longer. He said that, want me to tell you?
Sure, yeah, right. Please.
I thought it was interesting because I didn't have that much experience in it, but he said he just finished a project with him, and he said that the management, upper management, is just terrified of having another Blackfish incident, and so they want to do roller coasters and they want to do rides like that, and said, but Universal and Disney are just beating them, so why would you want to go to a third-rate amusement park? And so they were trying to convince them to do more animal things, like do a penguin encounter where you can go in and see them and focus on the animals in a real positive way. And he said the management said, no, we will not do anything like that because it will cause us more trouble. He thinks they're going to slowly dwindle and die on the vine.
It seems that they're learning their lesson a little bit, because as you go, when I was looking for stuff on this story, I had emailed myself this story a couple of weeks ago when we were looking for stuff on the press release section of every theme park has a section on their website that's dedicated to press releases and information coming on. There was nothing. Absolutely nothing that was on their website about the 350 layoffs. What they did have was they had information on press releases on stuff like animal encounters, mm-hmm. stuff like new projects that they're bringing into SeaWorld, where it's more of an experience, not necessarily a show, mm-hmm. but definitely more of an experience with animals, and there's dolphins and penguins. And so part of what John's story was is that they're taking some of these layoffs and reinvesting the cash in these positions into new marketing. So it sounds like maybe they're moving away from that attitude of we can't have these things, we don't want any of this stuff to...
And of course, for us it's all speculation, but I mean, you have to think, there's always that overcorrection when something happens, this hit us really bad, we're going to overcorrect and go completely conservative, and then at some point they come to their senses and go, okay, our name is SeaWorld. That's what we do. I mean, unless you rename the park and get out of that business,
maybe they could rename it to Marine World.
Wow.
Well, and to David's point, why would you want to go to a they're selling, SeaWorld owns Busch Gardens and they own a variety of roller coaster themed theme parks. And we did a story 2 weeks ago where the people that run Madame Tussauds and they run Legoland, they are looking at buying out those portions to get a bigger foothold in the theme park business in the United States, because they're not doing so well in Europe right now. They're looking at buying out all those roller coaster theme parks from SeaWorld, and SeaWorld is looking at going in a different direction. I don't know if they know what that direction is quite yet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a great discussion. Brandis, let's talk about Universal Studios. News story number two.
Okay. Two 13-year-old girls say they were called an inappropriate name by a character at Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. The incident was caught on camera. The two girls went with a group to Halloween Horror Nights on September 26th to have some fun, but instead they say they felt embarrassed by what the character said. I was mostly shocked because I didn't think that could happen, one of the girls told Los Angeles station KABC. And I think later I really understood that it was not okay, and then it made me feel, once again, very uncomfortable. And that's not what you want to feel when you go to an amusement park. The girls' mothers say they called the park asking to meet with management and were told by guest relations employee that they could buy a ticket to the park, go in, and speak to management. But the employee then said the theme park was sold out that day. 3.5 weeks later, the mothers and their daughters have called on attorney Gloria Allred to become involved. However, they say they're not taking any legal action. I want an apology to them. I want an apology to me. And I would really like to talk to that woman as well as ask her what was she thinking, said one girl's mother. In a statement released to KABC, Universal Studios said, "We take these issues very seriously and are looking into them. The conduct does not reflect our values or our guests' communication guidelines. We are reaching out to those involved and will deal with the situation appropriately."
All right. That's a lot to break down. So we've got two. We've got a mom and a dad, and then David's got two girls.
Also a dad.
Yeah, also he's also a dad. David's not a 13-year-old girl.
I brought proof.
Yeah, no, it's empty.
I got proof. She's in the corner.
You're missing one though.
I am.
So let's. I want to throw this over to the parents, and then I want David. I want you to kind of comment about sort of the theme parky, you know, responsibilities on a microphone aspect of it. So, as parents, what is your reaction to this story?
I'd have to see the video to know how offended I would be if it was my child. It's still wrong. What they called her was very wrong. It was very derogatory and sexist. But I also want to know, like, what were the girls doing that made her even say that?
Well, and I've seen the video.
If they were saying something similar to her, then it's kind of like, because it was a female employee, wasn't it?
It was a female employee.
So
and
if they were saying something to the female employee along those lines, and the female employee applied along the same lines, then that might be a little bit more.
I don't know that it was an interaction. I've seen the video. Okay. And it's on the internet. It's on the KABC website when you look at the story.
I'll go look at it.
Yeah. So when you look at the video, now what was transpiring, what was going on before, it looks like the Universal employee just approaches them as part of their character and singled them out, you know, for whatever reason, because maybe they were young girls or for whatever reason. And then just, we're not going to say the name. It was, Brandis said it perfectly. It's a derogatory sexist name. You know, the story's out there. The story, you can read what this person called them, but it looks like this person was trying to interact with them in character. And
what was the character?
Yeah, that I'm not sure of. It was a character in some show. I'm assuming it's like the Hanging kind of a show that they do.
Oh,
was a character from a movie, and that was a line from a movie. It's still not.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, and not 13-year-old girls. Then you know, get adult women who
can be called derogatory.
No. Who, you know, you could read easier to know if it's going to offend them or know if they're going to get that it's a character. Yeah. Or, you know, just not two little girls who are just learning about the world.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's good is from this coming out, this is going to shut all that down. You know, now that this is out in the open, unfortunately, because of those girls, they had to experience that. But
yeah.
This is the writing's on the wall here. You can't get away with that.
This is not the first time that Universal Studios has gotten in trouble for something a character has said at Halloween Horror Nights.
Correct. It's not the first time they've shut down in the middle of Halloween Horror Nights.
John, do you remember what?
What happened?
John,
do
you remember?
I remember being shut down.
John, what'd you do?
I don't remember what.
So, they used to have, and they still have it over in Universal Orlando. They had a Bill and Ted's show.
Right. It was basically the flashback of the year, right, in jest.
Right. And so there was a character in the Bill and Ted's show that they brought out Superman, or they brought out, I don't know, a character, and they referred to him by they referred to this character on stage with a homophobic slur.
I was just, as you were getting there, I was guessing what it was.
So this is not the first time that they've had this problem. I'm gonna throw it over to
somebody should just mail him a list of words that are not okay and appropriate age limit
and I will say, you know, in Universal's behalf, they usually respond to these very quickly. Like, you know, Bill and Ted's was shut down for the rest of that season.
Sure.
And did not come back. They replaced that with Jabberwockies. But
the response seems odd.
This entire, you know, response of calling the park and getting that information, that sounds like, you know, as typical we know working in parks, the first chance you get on the phone is you need to call back and get someone higher up. Like, that sounds just like...
Always drop somewhere.
Right. Well, and it sounds like probably who they spoke to that first time wasn't someone who was even at a level who could make a decision like that and was just giving the company line of, you want to talk to us, this is what you have to do, versus realizing, maybe I should put you on hold and get a supervisor or someone higher up to deal with this.
I'm going to throw it over to David. David, you were a trainer on the Jungle Cruise. Mm-hmm. You're obviously you're a comedian. I think you've taught comedy before. Mm-hmm. What's your take on all of this?
Two things. From the article, I think it's funny that they thought they went to a Halloween Horror Night and were offended by something that happened. That's the first thing. I'm like, come on. The second thing is anytime anyone uses Gloria Allred, they should just immediately be ignored. Any other attorney, that's fine. Just whenever I see her, I'm like, that's just my own opinion. Feel free to edit that out.
I don't know if they were using Gloria. I know they had contacted Gloria Allred, and they're not suing. But,
yeah.
Maybe but that was their first inclination.
But the most, yeah. if there was a race between her and former L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa for who could get in front of a camera first, it would be a bloodbath between the two of them. How's that for a random comment? For me, stuff like that goes down to training, that you have to train the people better. And I know for the Halloween Horror Nights, they just bring in a lot of people. We've had other friends that have worked there. They bring them in and let them go. And so they don't have a lot of training, so they might say incorrect things like that. But that's... the fact that it's a woman saying it to girls doesn't make it any better.
And the comments, if you read the comments on the story, some of them were from women, were quite vicious. Why are these girls by themselves? Why weren't they there with the parent?
For Halloween Horror Night, I wouldn't let my girls go by themselves. I just got the nod yes from my wife.
Yeah.
That, we wouldn't let them do that.
I haven't been to Universal Studios, but as I was saying, when we go to Not Scary Farm, at one point it's all older teenagers, and I would not want my 13-year-old daughter wandering around a scary park with a bunch of 17-year-old boys way too old for her that might just be...
Right, ma'am.
Yeah.
Looking for someone
I think it definitely goes to... You haven't been to Halloween Horror Nights. If Disney is at one end of the adult spectrum for Halloween entertainment, I think Halloween Horror Nights is at the exact opposite end. You know, it, even worse, I think some... Not worse, but I mean, even more mature than... Scary Farm. Yeah.
See, and I didn't know that. They should do a better job of making that clear. But I saw parents, I saw a dad take 5 or 6 kids, young kids, I think they were 7 or 8, took them to go see Deadpool. So there's parents that are always going to do stupid things.
I saw complaints online over parents that took their kids to Deadpool and were shocked that it was so bad.
Yeah, and there were lots of warnings from Deadpool that was not a movie you should go see. So the parents should be better. That performer should have been a lot better. My fear is that they'll use that to crack down on it, and then they'll just make it, and it'll be less fun every year, because next year someone else will say something. Well, we can't do that anymore.
Well, it's our favorite statement. The lawyers will get involved, and suddenly the scripts will become lawyerized.
And it's not even that; it's the threat of lawyers. And it's great. Companies like that don't have to use their lawyers because people become self-policing. And they're like, well, like the candy thing at the parade. Well, we can, you know, something might happen. I'm like, well. Something might always happen everywhere.
What advice did you give? I know. So when I worked there, it was maybe a little bit looser, but we were given the liberty to go off script. It's the Jungle Cruise when I worked there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's on a different level than a street performer at Halloween Horror Nights. But you're given a mic. You're given 8 minutes in the jungle by yourself with 40 people. What advice did you give to people in terms of staying on script or ad-libbing or appropriate comments when you were there?
For my rookies, I would tell them, well, I guess I only trained rookies, right? I would tell them they'd better stay on the script the first 6 months or so until you know it really well, stay on script, which I guess it wasn't hypocritical because I didn't even know most of the jokes on the script. I had very little relationship with it before they asked me to be on the team to help update it. So until you know it, stay on it. And then when you're more comfortable, then you can improvise. But you can't go and offend people. And I offended people and had complaints because sometimes I would just go a little bit too far. And then you're like, ah, crap, I got to dial it back. But something that would work well in one boat wouldn't work well the next, literally the very next boat.
And I think we all, I mean, from those of us who work the Jungle Cruise, you know, you'd have that moment where as guests are coming in, you'd kind of try to read the boat and know, like, okay, where can I push the line in? And, I mean, Chris, like for you, how quickly was it before you went off script? I mean, I think I maybe...
Well, I was a nerd, so I had memorized that script from the time I was 10 years old. So I knew the script, and I had read the books about Jungle Cruise and heard the stories. And so it wasn't long. It was maybe about a month or so before I started improvising
on
my own.
That's about the average, I think.
Yeah.
I lasted a day before I went off script.
Yeah.
But I think in this case, and certainly doesn't excuse what this person said, I think this person was just not given the proper amount of training, or maybe didn't have that sort of brain function to think – Maybe I shouldn't take this as far as this, and I think maybe this was just something that came out of their mouth, and unfortunately, like David said, this is going to be used to crack down and make the event
Does Universal Studios have an age limit suggestion? Because I know at...
They do. It's actually in big letters on... I just looked. on their website, there's a giant warning. This may be too intense for children under 13.
Okay, so their age limit is 13 and over. Scary Farm has the same warning on their tickets in bold letters.
And at the same time...
I actually see little kids there. And little kids crying, and parents are like, oh, it's all make-believe. It's all make-believe. Well, yeah, but that's make-believe looking scary, jumping at you.
Quite honestly, I had a sore throat from screaming after your eyes. I'm a grown man. You know, if I was 7, I don't know how I would have done it. Whatever.
Right.
What it seems like we have here, though, is like you had, you know, like you said, there is that downside where, yeah, now they're going to regulate stuff. And you had kind of like a perfect storm. You had parents that made a bad decision by letting them go. You probably had... You know, you had a representative there who made a bad decision by not getting the manager, and you had an actor who made a bad call. It was a perfect storm, and then that's how it was.
And Halloween Haunt, is there alcohol allowed in the parks at Halloween Haunt?
Yeah,
there is.
Yeah, so I know there's definitely alcohol for sale, though I think this year they started cracking down on it. I believe you're only allowed to purchase 2 drinks for the entire night. They give you a wristband, and then they sort of, I don't know if they punch it or something, that you're only allowed to purchase 2 alcoholic drinks for the entire night. But still, that's dropping your 2 13-year-old girls off in a place where, you know, there's alcohol involved.
That just means you got a pregame. That's what that means.
That's what that, yeah.
You got to smuggle the booze in their belly.
If their intent was to make me drink heavier at a bar outside, then, yeah.
We did... At Not Scary Farm, when we were younger, we did go get a couple drinks beforehand once, but they only have beer and wine inside the park.
Right.
And the lines are too long, and in between, you can't really get drunk unless you just planted yourself there to only drink.
You're just not trying hard enough.
Yeah. Yeah, so I showed up there a little buzzed when I was younger, and I was sober by the time I got to the next beer station, so...
All right. Well, thank you, Brandis. And we're going to move on to our last news story. And this was a big one. This was one that came out earlier this week. And we're going to use that to segue into our final segment with David. Brandis, can you take it away?
Disneyland officials have announced that the highly anticipated Disneyland Eastern Gateway project is dead for now. And the new focus is on developing a new 4-diamond hotel and parking structure on the west side of the resort, which could open near the debut of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in 2019. The 700-room hotel will feature 2 pools, concierge service, a kids' play area, and an upscale rooftop restaurant where visitors would be able to watch Disneyland's nightly fireworks. Lush trees and water elements will dot the landscape along with walkways that connect Disney's 4 hotel properties. The new hotel will be Disney's 3rd 4-diamond luxury resort, joining the Disneyland Hotel and Disney's Grand California Hotel and Spa. Disney's Paradise Pier Hotel is considered a 3-diamond property. The new hotel, yet to be named, is the first Disney has built in Anaheim in 20 years and will adhere to AAA's strict 4-diamond standard guidelines.
And Brandis, I'm going to stop right there. So I printed out the 4-diamond requirements for hotels from the AAA. And they didn't give much. It says the 4-diamond AAA requirements. These establishments are upscale in all areas. Accommodations are progressively more refined and stylish. The physical attributes reflect an obvious enhanced level of quality throughout. The fundamental hallmarks at this level include an extensive array of amenities combined with a high degree of hospitality, service, and attention to detail. So it's a little generic, but I think...
It sounds like you just sold it. You just upsell it right there.
You're right, yeah.
But I'm sure it's really awesome, but yeah.
Yeah. All right, continue, Randy.
The new hotel parking structure is expected to serve 2,000 or more cars. Disney also plans to build a platform connecting the Disneyland monorail system inside the new hotel. The monorail will not be rerouted to formally planned with the... The monorail will not be rerouted as formally planned with the Eastern Gateway project, nor will the Grand Californian have a dedicated stop. Disney officials have described the project as a contemporary-style hotel that will take up 17 acres on the west side of downtown Disney, where ESPN Zone, the AMC Theaters, Earl of Sandwich, Starbucks, and Rainforest Cafe currently sit. Disneyland officials announced they are beginning to inform the affected tenants of the resort's plans, and there's a possibility that some of them may operate inside of the hotel. Downtown Disney visitors in the future will have a dedicated parking lot in the Simba Lot on Cotella Avenue and Disneyland Drive. Disney said they plan to build a gateway for visitors to enter Downtown Disney. The ground level of the hotel will include shops and restaurants opening onto an expansive landscaped plaza complete with playful water features, creating a gathering place for guests and visitors. The new hotel also connects all four hotels of the Disneyland Resort through lush gardens and beautiful landscaped walkways, transforming the gateway on the west side and creating a welcoming entry for our Disneyland Resort guests. This is one of the largest infrastructure projects to take place in the resort in the last two decades, said Susie Brown, a Disneyland spokeswoman. It will significantly, why'd you give me such a long story? It will significantly improve circulation today and lay the foundation for future growth throughout the resort area. The Eastern Gateway Project, planned for the east side of Harbor Boulevard, included a seven-story, 6,900-spot parking structure, a new transportation hub with security screening, and a pedestrian bridge over Harbor Boulevard. The bridge, on the site of the former Carousel Inn Hotel, would have helped bring in guests onto the Esplanade area of Disneyland and Disney California Adventures near the ticket booths. Construction on the newly announced project will start in 2018 with a scheduled completion of 2021. Are you guys glad I'm done reading?
No, that was very good. And I give you that story because, quite honestly, I'm sick of the sound of my own voice. And I wanted to be able to hear the story, and then we can all react to it without me having to actually participate in it. So that is a lot of information, right? That was a huge story that came out this week, least of which is that Disney is abandoning their Eastern Gateway. And the Eastern Gateway was going to be this huge project on Harbor Boulevard that was going to include a parking structure and a pedestrian bridge, which the city of Anaheim and the merchants and hoteliers on Harbor Boulevard were adamantly against.
Wrong. City of Anaheim was fine. They approved it. It's the merchants and hotel were against the traffic.
Yes. After that last city council election, though, it was the decidedly
That's what I was going to say. I know this isn't a political show, but I'm pretty sure this has to do with the new city council because that was so contentious it made national news.
All it would take is one landowner on Harbor Boulevard to throw up a lawsuit, and that would have stopped construction. And they need this thing open by the time Star Wars Land opened.
Yeah.
The Eastern Project's going to happen because it was going to have an off-ramp from the freeway directly into the parking garage. And Disney wants that. I think that would be better for everybody. It's going to happen eventually.
There was a great article in the OC Register that addressed that exact issue. And so the issue was that by being so adamantly against this and not working with Disney, but rather trying to get these new city council people who were elected kind of on, I don't want to say an anti-Disney platform, but like a certainly a less Disney-friendly platform, was did these merchants kind of shoot themselves in the foot a little bit because here's what's going to happen. According to this article, here's what they forecast is happening. The Carousel Inn is getting torn down, and that's going to be a vacant, empty, open lot for God knows how many years. Now, as this is happening, they're going to direct traffic away from the Harbor Boulevard side of the property. They're going to be pushing it all towards the western side of the property, which is Disneyland Drive and Cotella Avenue. So as they're making this push in 2019, where they're going to be drawing thousands of visitors into the western side of the property, what's going to be happening is that these properties are going to start to lose value, and they've essentially, Disney has now created Harbor Boulevard as the back end of the property. It's exactly what happened onto 192 in Florida, which the article also mentioned, where as Disney made the push to contain itself more in its own boundaries, a lot of these businesses went out of business. So here's what's going to happen. As these businesses start to go under, they're going to be more willing to sell, and Disney's going to own the land anyway in 20 years. So
I read that article. I thought it was right on point.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, which is a wild idea, considering that for 60 years, Harbor Boulevard has been the main entrance to Disneyland. We all have memories of driving into Disneyland off of Harbor Boulevard and entering into the parking structure. And so, you know, that's one aspect of it and it is a political aspect, and it is sort of Disney playing hardball by just saying, okay, we're going to cancel this project. We're going to move everything to the other side of the property. And
although I, a guy we both know, who was working at the park told me a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, that they were going to build this hotel, this luxury hotel. And that's after they announced the Eastern Gateway project. And he said, yeah, this one's happening too.
Well, and
so I think Disney always knew it.
I was going to say, if you look at it, if construction started in 2018, there's no way that this is we just thought of this and we're going to have plans and everything in place to start construction in 2018.
I think the hotel was always going to happen, but the
canceling of the Eastern Gateway.
The canceling of the Eastern Gateway and the newly announced parking structure. And I believe what is
the newly announced parking structure has been in the works as well.
That was part of Disney. All
right. As far as I know, yeah.
So that's one take. That's one takeaway from it. The second takeaway from it is the footprint of the new hotel.
Well, so and we'll let David talk about the history of that. But the one thing, you know, the biggest thing I've been reading about the initial reaction when this first came out within, you know, an hour of it was, oh my God, you're taking away ESPN, you're taking away Rainforest, you're taking away Earl of Sandwich, and you're taking away the theaters. As you know, first off, the artist rendering which is out there is just that. It's an artist rendering which Disney got out quickly. It's not necessarily...
But Disney has announced that those businesses are being given notice that they're going away.
They're going away in their current state.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that there will be restaurants and shops on that first level makes me think that something like Earl of Sandwich will probably show up again. Obviously, Rainforest Cafe, you'd have to completely rebuild that into the hotel. So I think that's something which will probably be gone completely. Yeah. And honestly, Rainforest Cafe has kind of been... Well, it's still profitable at places like a Downtown Disney. Other locations have been closed.
They just closed one in our big local mall here in Orange County. So,
ESPN Zone as well. It's just how big that is. You're not going to see a two-story thing.
And if you go to Disney, and if you go to Downtown Disney, I think anybody that's been inside ESPN Zone in the last 10 years can agree that it is not what it used to be.
It was the place you would go to get your validation stamped. And
it is now, but you know, they had the rock wall, they had the VR simulators, yep. They had that rock wall has been abandoned and closed for a decade now. So people have been saying for many years now that they need to do something with the ESPN Zone. I just don't think that we thought that, you know, leveling it was going to be the answer to that question.
Falls under be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Right. The one that surprises me the most is the movie theater.
And that may be, you know...
Exactly.
If you're trying to make Downtown Disney this destination, it drew people in and you'd stay there for hours. I think they're putting the message out that Downtown Disney is now just a corridor into the parks. It's not... I mean, while there are eating and facilities there, with the change they did recently in the parking of it, they're really kind of pushing that Downtown Disney is... for the use of our guests of the resort.
Well, somebody pointed out there's a movie theater across the street at Garden Walk.
Yep.
You know, so, but in terms of the conventioners and the people that are staying at the park, the resort hotels for not going to the park, maybe people that are there for conventions, people that are there for meetings, the movie theater was sort of something for them to do. Now, I heard yesterday that somebody said this might have to do something with security concerns, that by having people coming into the Downtown Disney area that are just there for movies or just there for Rainforest Cafe, that now this is going to sort of level off the number of people that are coming in from the outside just specifically to go to Downtown Disney.
The fare hike on the parking is what did it.
Yeah.
For a lot of people. That's why I'm not going there to have lunch anymore. I used to go have appointments. Well, we'll go to Earl of Sandwich and go hang out. I'm like, I'm not in the mood to prove that I spent $20 so I can get out for a cheaper fee, I'll just go have lunch somewhere else. And the fact that they're going to get rid of Earl of Sandwich just kills me, because that's the best restaurant.
Well, I feel like if there's any place which will stay, that'll find its way back into the new hotel. Yeah.
I'm really regretting that I've never eaten there.
It's fantastic. You got to go.
I'm assuming it's worth it. The turkey holiday one. Oh.
No, we always get the Italian, and the meatball is good too. It's just, and the chips they have.
They're a good sandwich. Yeah.
When I went to...
By the way, we will take sponsorship
We will. You know, Earl of Sandwich, if you're listening. Last week it was Home Depot. This week it's Earl of Sandwich.
Nice.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We certainly hope you've enjoyed the show. Remember, you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/vacationland. You can also follow us on Instagram at VLPodcast. And you can email us at vacationlandpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to be back next week with the Beyond the Turnstiles segment of our show. We're going to be talking about the history of the Disneyland Hotel and also giving you more insight on our thoughts to what the Western Gateway Project means for the Disneyland Resort. Also, we won't be having a show the week after that because some of the team is going to be in Walt Disney World. So make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with all of the fun. So, for all of our guests, thank you for coming in. John, thank you for coming in, David. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in Vacation Land.